Hey there guys, welcome back to the Cannabis Cure UK Freedom News Podcast. I'm Greg, I'm joined here with Johnny Lyon. How's it going, my man?
Very well, thanks Greg, how are you?
I am excellent. Right, we're going to talk about the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Today we are going to be talking about normal memberships today. We're going to be talking about the news and the views in the cannabis community in general. Checking them out, a bit of Freedom News Podcastage stuff, you know how it goes. This week I went up to the West Midlands for their first UK CSC meeting. It was awesome. Rich did a fantastic job of putting that on. I got to meet up with Frank's Odyssey, Viva Sativa, True Cannibalis, from Connoisseur Genetics. Jesus, we had so many strains. I think it was probably about 15 different varieties went through my lungs. We smoked some good medicine. True is actually the guy that selected the Casey Jones cut that goes around the UK. He is got a very good nose and very good eye and very good taste, I would say. He knows what he's talking about, and it was great to get to smoke with him and finally meet him and the rest of everyone. I think we're going to have to go for a bong hit here. The music's building up for it. Grab your lights, guys. Yeah, I finished some of that Grand Doggy Purps yesterday. That was me getting relaxed after work. I've been doing some cleaning shifts in the evening, and it really was nice to come home to that, fill up a bowl of that, some nice cool bong water, and well, not bong water, but you know, nice cool water in my bong. I'll save it. I put it in the fridge just to load it up. But you know, it was good to chillax and feel at one with my herbalists, catch up on the phone with some mates, and you know how it goes. Hard day at work, hard day at herbs. That's the word. Right, well, the West Midlands Cannabis Community meeting was a success, I would say. Sarah Martin's attended virtually via Skype, so we are going to play a little bit of that footage for you, so you can attend virtually via the podcast wherever you are at home right now. I feel very proud that we can do that, and the UK CSC movement is making it so we can do it, so get involved with it. We'll tell you how to do that later. We've also been asked to be part of the new Pot Network, or Pot Net, by Radical Russ Belleville at radicalrust.com. That's going to be exciting too. We're going to get Cannabis Cure TV back on there. It's going to play 1 hour every week. We're going to have the Freedom News podcast. It's going to play the first hour every week. And Des and I are also going to be interviewed on there on the 14th of July. And that will be live at about midnight, 11:30 to midnight, on the 14th, 15th July, whatever date you want to call it. I'll give you more information about that on the blog, cannabiscure.co.uk, and here on the podcast from now in between then. And just really excited to be part of that. I think Russ is going to do a great job over there in his new little setting on his website, radicalrust.com. We've got some more good things to tell you about activism in the UK. I'm going to be starting a film project called, well, I'll talk about that later. I'll let you know what it's called then. You can hold your seats and wait for that. Got a little bit more news about normal memberships and find out what the packages will be, and we will let you know when you'll be able to join up for that very, very soon. So hold your horses. News stories from Ian Duncan Smith, who wants to stop heroin addicts from having incapacity benefits. We'll find out more about that soon. I just think it's ridiculous to try and stop people who are already criminalised for doing something, who can't get a job, and then tell them, go and try and get a job. Doesn't really make sense to me. So we'll be looking at a story about that and a few views and opinions from around the UK. I think that's pretty much all I've got to say for the intro. We're gonna go and listen to a song, Vibes Cartel, Marie. This one's for Dan Shorter out there in Sussex. Thanks for following, thanks for your support. It's good to talk to you online, and we'll catch you later soon. We are gonna have some Sussex meetups for the UK CSC.
Yo, Pimpin, write down these words. I've been a love song for the herbs.
Ready, Roshan?
Ready.
Cure UK.
When you're gone, when we miss you, you roll with the blame with the rizzler. When we turn you and twist you, me get a different state of mind. The law set for this, yeah. Policeman a search me, them miss ya. Better them carry me go live in a jail. If loving you is a crime. Me love it when you roll up. You look good in a grizzly when you fall up. Me prefer you when you cure up. Cause when you fresh you burn me chase. Ah, look how far where you come from. Like metro media likes to unlock. The day when you see me touch a white lady, at the day me lay to rest. Herbalist, Marie, me nah let her go. Them a fi lock me up for she and throw away the key. She and me marijuana, na na na. Marie, you are for me. Me no care who disagree. Cause she and me marijuana, na 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 na. Anywhere the DJ go. Coulda Trinidad, coulda Tobago. Me have to see you when me wake up. See you at bedtime. You just a run through my brain, so. Your vibes up the blood in my veins, so. Yeah, Solomon grave make you famous. That mean your blessing is so divine. John said, me love it when you roll up. You look good in a grizzly when you fall up. Me prefer you when you cure up. Cause when you fresh you burn me chase. Ah, look how far where you come from. Like metro media likes to unlock. The day when you see me touch a white lady, at the day me lay to rest. Herbalist, Marie, me nah let her go. Them a fi lock me up for she and throw away the key. She and me marijuana, na na na. Marie, you are for me. Me no care who disagree. Cause she and me marijuana, na 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 na.
This man should be arrested for
excuse
war crimes.
JP Morgan paid him off for the
excuse
Iraq
me.
War. 3 months after he invaded Iraq, they held up the Iraq bank for $20 billion. He was then paid $6 million every year and still is from JP Morgan 6 months after he left office. The man is a war criminal.
At the Leveson inquiry, as Mr. Blair, former Prime Minister, giving evidence there, an interruption by a protester. You may have heard they're protesting about the Iraq war and Mr. Blair's job subsequently. Let's listen to Lord Leveson's response.
And I'd like to find out how this gentleman managed to access the court through what is supposed to be a secure corridor. And I'll have an investigation undertaken about that immediately. I apologise.
That's fine. Can I just say, actually, on the record, what he said about Iraq and JP Morgan is completely and totally untrue. I've never had a discussion with them about that or any relationship between them and Iraq.
You should not see... You're entitled to say what you want.
Yeah.
You should not feel it necessary to answer somebody else's points.
Freedom News Podcast.
Tony, we think it's necessary that you answer our questions. Well done to that guy for getting in there, however that happens. Security must have been great that day. I'm sure we're paying through the teeth for it as well. Tony Blair must be one of the most protected people in the world. I think a war trials committee in, I can't quite remember where it was now, they found him and George Bush guilty of war crimes. I'm pretty sure that there must be a warrant out for his arrest or something. But anyway, thanks for Sky News for getting it out, and thanks for whoever put that on YouTube, ripped it up and got it out there so we can share the truth and have freedom of speech and share the facts. We don't want to shush these people down. He should have his right to say this is an inquiry. Maybe it's over the wrong kind of inquiry, but he gets away with genocide, really, isn't it? Okay, we're gonna go head over to the news now. Thanks to Flash Grizzle for supplying this amazing tune, Pearl, on his Snake in the Grass EP. You can get that at Grizzling Records, bandcamp.com. We'll be right back. Okay, so first story we're going to cover in the news section is from the Sheffield Star, thestar.co.uk. Cannabis duo's jail sentences reduced, so from Monday 28th of May. Two men locked up after being convicted of running a thriving cannabis farm have had their sentences cut. Gary Michael Tomney, 43, of Eastern Avenue, Dinnington, and Leon Brett Sully, 32, of Brailsford Road, Ecclesfield, were jailed for 6 and 4 years at Sheffield Crown Court in August last year. 6 years, Jesus, for cannabis. Mm. The duo were prosecuted after police raid on the house in Wright Street, Rotherham, in August 2010, which uncovered cannabis plants with the potential for a 3 kilo yield with a potential £20,000 street value. Officers found sophisticated hydroponic equipment designed to help nurture the fledging plants. Lord Justice Elias, sitting with Mr. Justice Owen and Judge Clement Goldstone, QC, decided that both men's sentences were too long. He cut their sentences after agreeing that the cannabis operation was not conducted on an industrial scale, in inverted commas. Tomney's sentence had been fixed too high, said Lord Justice Ellis, and Sully was not in a senior position, he added. All right, so that's good news that we've had some of our growers of freedom out there have their sentences reduced. It wasn't a commercial scale, that's recognisable. We know that commercial scales are in 73, 74 million, like GW are doing. These guys obviously just growing a fair amount of weed, if they are selling it. You know, that's up to them. They should really be able to trade a plant and a vegetable matter like any other plant, shouldn't they really? If they want to do it on a commercial scale, maybe they should be able to be able to pay some kind of tax or have to have a license to kind of do that scale. If they're growing at home, I think that's fair enough. We should all be able to do that. These guys should not be put in prison for any length of time. 6 and 4 years, certainly not. So let's hope that they have their sentences reduced and they don't have to serve the full sort of 18 months what they've been given. Next story I'm going to go on to is a contaminated drugs story again. Dorset police are warning that there is another drug out there that is potentially deadly. And surprise, surprise, is it on the regulated market? No. So this one is an urgent warning from the 21st of May 2012. Fatal toxic drugs in circulation. Please pass this information on at your discretion. What they know. Police were called to an address in Bournemouth on May 21st. At the scene, a male was found deceased and four others were showing signs of toxic reactions to an unknown substance. All have received immediate hospital treatment. Some 6 hours after death, the deceased body was showing signs of excessive heat. One of the four surviving persons is in intensive care and having to be heavily sedated due to the extreme muscular seizures. Symptoms of... Yeah, sounds nasty, doesn't it? Symptoms of the surviving persons are profound sweating, racing heartbeat up to 3 times the regular speed, extreme muscle tension and delirious ranting. If any person is found showing signs of these symptoms, please dial 999 and ask for immediate medical assistance. The description of the tablets seized by the police at the scene are pink tablets embossed with the letter M. I don't know the shape, it doesn't say there. That might have been another one, but maybe there's not too many pink tablets with M on around. If you've come across them, don't buy them, don't take them. And just if you know other people that are into taking their pills, just warn them that they're, you know, there is something potentially toxic, well, very toxic and obviously fatal around. This is just another argument for regulation. People, prohibition isn't stopping people from taking these drugs or going and buying them from any old sod on the black market. We need to have regulated market for party drugs and for pills and things. Even if people are deadly against them, it needs to be there in place as a harm reduction measure. It's just the same argument with cannabis. If people are able to go into a dispensary or they're able to go into a legal you know, I hate saying it, like, you know, like a legal highs kind of thing, like a place where you can go and buy drugs, recreational drugs, safely. You know what's in them, you know that there's a purity. Someone can tell you, right, these are symptoms you can be aware of if you see these are things you can do to try and, you know, calm it down. If people have an awhite, best advice I give them, get some sugar in your system quick, boy. Had several situations lately where someone's taken smoked a little bit too much, well, more than they're used to, because they've been in a social environment where they've seen other people doing it. People shouldn't feel like they have to go and smoke as much as other people or take a massive bong hit or something like that to be cool, because it might end your evening a lot earlier than you thought. You might have a bad time, you might have a good time, whatever, but there are risks when you do that with drugs that you have absolutely no idea of the toxicity of. And this is a case where someone has lost their life, unfortunately, and even after they've died, their body is showing severe symptoms of toxicity. The excessive heat off a body isn't normal. All right, that's why they've said that there. If you're gonna take buy these drugs and take them on regular basis or whatever, or on a recreational basis, please know who you're buying it off, know the source, and if in doubt, chuck it out. Okay, my next story is another one about another drug other than cannabis. I do think it's important that we keep our eye on everything that's going on. Ian Duncan Smith wants to strip heroin addicts of their incapacity benefits. It's like telling a section of society with criminal records and a hard drug dependence to get work or else. It's a bit like up your own arse, if you ask me, and like on your ivory tower. So I will be playing an interview that Lowell Walsh shot from the SSDP conference with a woman called Erin from INPUD. I'll get onto that in a little bit, but I want to read this article, Taking Away Benefits from Heroin Users Won't Solve Anything, from The Independent. It was published on the 23rd of May, so just going back a little bit. It was reported today that Ian Duncan Smith is threatening to stop heroin addicts from being able to claim incapacity benefits. About 100 of my patients are heroin users, and they are all signed off work. IDS pointed out that it was unfair that hard-working taxpayers were paying for the addictions of others. This may well be true, but it is an attempt to force heroin users into gainful employment, really a viable option. We recently advertised for an admin assistant in our surgery. It is a low-paid, unskilled, part-time position that required no previous experience and no great physical exertion. Such is the nature of the times. We had over 60 applicants, most of whom were greatly overqualified for the post. None of the applicants were intravenous heroin users, but if they were, we wouldn't have shortlisted them. If we wouldn't consider employing a heroin user, who does Mr. Smith think will? Will the exception of the odd ailing rock star I am yet to hear of a gainfully employing injecting heroin addict? This is what made me think of the interview that Lowell shot of Erin, and this is why I want to play it to you, because it does give you a completely different contrast on different way regulation can influence the way people use drugs. Heroin is an awful, all-consuming drug that destroys the personality of the person behind the habit. The next fix becomes more important to the user than food, shelter, and most sadly, the people who care about them the most. It is not a lifestyle that can easily coexist with a 9-to-5 job. IDS is very welcome to switch all of my heroin addicts from incapacity benefits to job seekers allowance, but it would simply be an expensive and time-consuming PR exercise that led people from one hand out to another. If he chose to take it one step further and remove all their benefits, the result would be an almighty hurrah for some, but would simply mean a large number of the most vulnerable members of our society being made homeless and being pushed further into crime, prostitution and begging, as they looked for alternative ways to feed their habits. Probably like stealing, breaking into people's houses and cars and to sell stuff, pawn in the shops and get a bit of money for their smack. Is that really what we want? Do we want to push up crime? We don't. Maybe the government do, because then they can give the police more money and they can go and raid our houses a little bit more. That's not something I really want to be, supporting. The extra burden placed on the criminal justice system would almost certainly end up costing far more than relatively meagre handouts that heroin users currently receive in the form of incapacity benefits. Our local drug and rehab services are quite good, but although most of my patients who use heroin are actively enrolled with substance misuse services, very few still successfully turn their lives around. Treating heroin addicts punitively with prison sentences doesn't seem to work either. So it would appear to me better to try and work out why people fall into heroin addiction in the first place. Most of us experiment with drugs at some level or another in our youth. But even during my own sustained and enthusiastic period of adolescence experimentation, I never got anywhere near a place where injecting a syringe full of heroin into my arm jumped up as being a good idea. Most, although no means all of my patients who use heroin, seem to take those extra few steps into harder drugs and full-scale addiction after a fairly miserable start in life. Heroin is often an escape from the grim realities of life, and almost amongst my patients, child abuse and growing up in care seem to pop up time and time again, as most damaging experienced addicts are trying to escape from. As a doctor, I try not to get carried away with the emotion and morality of what I see, as it interferes with a practical aspect of the job. Many of my patients have self-inflicted injuries and illnesses, and whether they are due to heroin, alcohol, smoking or falling off horses, in my eyes, politicians have no option but to take the same approach. I am dealing with addiction on an individual basis, while they have to consider it on a moral, on a more national scale, but ultimately the realities are the same. Heroin dependence exists and is hugely detrimental to everyone. Victoriolic soundbites about the cost to taxpayers might make favourable headlines in the right-wing media, but it doesn't make the problem go away. There will always be victims who fall prey to heroin, but how about trying to prevent young, vulnerable people from plunging into addiction rather than simply vilifying the ones they have?
Cannabis cure. Cannabis
cure. You know, this way we talk about people who use drugs and addiction and when we were at the SSDP conference, we got to speak to a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds, and they generally seem to use the word dependent, someone who is dependent. So there's a lot of stigma that's attached around the word addict and addiction that's been painted by the media, just as like people who, you know, just the word cannabis has, really, just as the word any kind of drug word has got a bad picture painted about it. But addict has got a very bad stigma attached to it, and people who are addicts are usually thought of as people that have to, you know, go around and scrounge around and are thieves and are criminals and they can't do anything, they're not reliable, when really, if you change their situation and the way they consume their drugs and what they're taking, if they're taking anything harmful or if they're taking a certain type of drug at all, for example, some people have benefit using methadone, other people don't. Other people will relapse and go back to heroin. Some people are able to go to the clinic every day and get off their methadone, but a lot of people aren't, like I say. There is also prescription heroin in the UK where you can get diamorphine, clean supply, clean needle. You can go and inject there on site 3 times a day. For some people it might be working, for the majority it isn't working as well as it could. It is very disruptive to the rest of their lives, where they have to go and be at a certain place at a certain time just to inject 3 times a day, where if they've got a kid they can't go and take them to school, they can't pick them up, they can't hold a job down having to go to a place like that and medicate like that, because it is a health issue. It's not recreational at that point. These are people that are trying to get their lives back on track and have a normal life. When we were at the SSDP, we got to speak to Erin, like I said, from INPUD, INPUD. That's the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. And Lowell Wolfe from the Berkshire Cannabis Community managed to grab my camera and grab an interview with Erin just before the end. I'm very grateful for him doing that. I haven't uploaded it to Cannabis Cure TV yet, but I will do that this week so you can go and get it and share it with other people, just so you don't have to share the whole podcast. We want to be able to get these clips out there. I think it's a very good interview, very useful information, and very grateful for Lowell for doing that for me. So without further ado, this is Erin.
My name's Erin O'Mara. I've been working for the last 10, 12 years in drug user organising and activism. Currently, I'm working with IMPUD, which is the International Network for People Who Use Drugs, and we work on an international level with organisations like the United Nations and its sister bodies, trying to put ourselves in the front line between policy makers, in particular the convention makers like the United Nations, in order to try and tackle some of the very serious human rights violations that are occurring against people who use drugs in a lot of parts of the world, like Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Vietnam, Russia, Ukraine, situations where people are put into boot camps. Well, they're worse than, but they're tortured. There's nothing, no two ways about it. And put in camps without trial for up to 5 years, just on the suspicion that they're a drug user. So they get no access to fair trial. They undergo all sorts. They're forced into labor. They undergo forced labor. This is in a lot of those countries I just mentioned. This is occurring today.
This is in the United States of America as well.
Yes, they have. Yeah, absolutely. Their prisoners are slaving away for private companies in the US. Yeah. We focus on those particular issues and the HIV epidemic, hepatitis C, the massively growing hepatitis C epidemic, that's where our sort of focus lies. We're also we're very interested in drug treatment and harm reduction. Our drug treatment drum is very much about involving users in drug treatment, being more innovative, creative in our responses to drug treatment. There's a very narrow model around drug treatment, and you know, like these boot camps and rehabilitation clinics in Cambodia and China and places like that. They're given money from international donors because it comes under the guise of drug treatment, which of course it isn't. Recently, WHO did come out with a document that IMPUD worked on as well to say that they don't support these types of drug treatment centres. Now, it's kind of hard to say what makes good drug treatment, what is a goal for good drug treatment, but it's much easier for the United Nations to say what does not constitute drug treatment. And so that's what they've come out doing. And also about changing the language. So in United Nations documents and things, we're called people who use drugs now, not drug users, not addicts, not those kind of words that carry derogatory, disempowered connotations. So that's the and I write about it. I'm the IMPUD sort of chief blogger at the moment. I also founded the UK drug users health and lifestyle magazine Black Poppy. We mainly operate it on a website now, Junk Mail, but that's been focusing on issues that affect people who use drugs lifestyle. So when drug use starts to affect your lifestyle, this is a magazine that talks to you. Yeah, without the judgments, without the pressure, without the saying go to recovery, get into treatment. It's just talks about how it is, what's going on, how it is and how we feel about it. So, yeah, that's been great. Personally, I'm also on a heroin program. I'm one of the few 400 in the United Kingdom that currently receive a pharmaceutically prepared heroin, or dimorphine it's called. Every day I go to my I go to my chemist once a week. I pick up my script, I pick up clean needles, water, my prescription, which is measured amounts of heroin in little glass ampules. I take it home. I have my, I organise my injections, 3 a day I have. And I organise them breakfast, late afternoon, nighttime. And it has changed my life. I've been on methadone in the past for about 13 years. I've bounced around from one methadone clinic to another. And I always used on top because I was addicted to heroin. You know, I was dependent on heroin, not methadone. And I never got on with methadone. It was always, it's a very depressive kind of drug. It's very heavy. And it leaves you feeling very tired, me personally, a lot of people get on perfectly well with methadone, but there's a lot of people who don't. And they wonder why these people are still using on top. But it's because we're not given treatment that is individualised. There's a one-treatment-fits-all approach in drug treatment, and then they wonder why it doesn't work. I think it's simple. You know, when a doctor finally said to me after years, well, what is it that you think you need? I nearly fell off the chair. It was the first time anybody had asked me that. And I said, well, heroin. You know, and then when I realised that there was a way maybe I could possibly get a heroin script, I did everything in my power to pursue that. It took me about 3 years, 2.5 years to get it. And I was at death's door. I was desperate. And I just didn't know how I could go on, you know, all these dead ends. And when I was finally prescribed it, it's been transformational. You take heroin out of the black market, you regulate it, you give it to somebody in sterile, measured amounts with clean equipment, and bam, it's a different drug. I see my family, things that never happened for years and years. I go out with my family, I cook, I have a really stable home life, I have hobbies, I work, I started a charity, I travel overseas. All these things which you would think a heroin user could never do. Yeah. I do. It's easy when it's not illegal and when it's not a black market drug. It's simple.
And just thinking about one other option that is being offered to users more often these days is actually the option to still be given morphine or another similar chemical, but having it injected under supervision. Now, if you were on a treatment like that, how do you think it would affect your ability to do the work you're doing and have the lifestyle that you have?
Well, this is the tragedy about settling for less. The medical profession in the UK, a small group wanted the heroin programs to expand, and in fact at one stage even the Home Secretary Alan Blunkett wanted them to expand. So at that time some quite eminent doctors at the Maudsley got together and were able to push the Swiss model, which was supervised
heroin programs where you go to a clinic every day and inject on site, leave, come back in the afternoon, up to three times a day. Well, that was the only way, it seemed to be the only way that they could possibly get a heroin program up and running in this country was to make it supervised. They were so, politicians were so worried about heroin leaking onto the streets. But obviously, why someone would want to go and sell their own heroin in order to buy street heroin makes absolutely no sense. And there's a simple solution to that. Every ampule is marked with a number. Another clinic I'd went to quite a few years ago, they just used to write down numbers when they'd give you your amps, and the next day you had to bring those empties back. So it's a simple way to stop diversion. But they took the easy way and settled for less and ended up with a clinic that was only able to take only the more chaotic or dispossessed users were able to put up with a treatment that was so restrictive like that. The heroin was a big carrot, but going to somewhere every day, once, twice, three times a day, what sort of life does that leave you to get a life together? It doesn't. It leaves you constantly stuck to that clinic, constantly around the people that are around the clinic, and totally unable. You don't even get Christmas Day off at that clinic. 365 days a year you have to go.
What if you have kids? What if you want a job?
Yeah, absolutely. You know. And they wonder why now, even though they had a reasonable amount of success in that program with people cutting down their street heroin use, cutting down crime, cutting down, stabilising, people weren't moving off the program, you know, because they weren't moving anywhere. So this is why it's so important to involve drug users in the creation, development, and monitoring and evaluation of these services, because without that, we end up with drug services that are not fit for purpose, and then we get, like now, we just blame the drug users in the end for that. The big recovery movement, they've been parked on methadone for years, but we've got to push them off into recovery. We've been parked on methadone because we've been involved in treatment that hasn't worked, and we've been going round revolving doors because the treatment is a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, we don't. When a person dies of cancer, we don't say, "Oh well, you failed to respond to treatment properly." You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm afraid I must get off, so I think we need to wrap that up there. But thank you very much, Erin. That's been really interesting.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Freedom News Podcast. News podcast.
Thank you very, very much to Lowell Wolf there from the Berkshire Cannabis Community for getting that interview again. Really great questions, really great answers from Erin. Definitely go and check out the website, www.inpud.net, International Network of People Who Use Drugs. And check out what they've got going on. They've got a Facebook page and a Twitter on there, and they've got a constitution, a little bit about them, their campaigns and their mission, and how you can get involved with them if you want to get in contact. I had a few different points that I wanted to bring up about that. Not necessarily just the interview there, but just the whole, you know, this whole conversation in general. With methadone, you have to go there every day. If you are ill and you can't get your medicine that day, that's it. You're going to have to suffer. You're going to have your cravings, and maybe you've forgotten to renew your prescription. That's it. You go down there. This has happened to, not to me, but I was with a friend, Dave, and he went down to go and get his methadone, and they said, haven't you got your prescription? You haven't renewed it. And he was like, no, I thought it had been done for me. And I said, well, sorry, we can't give you this. green liquid behind here. And it put him in a state instantly. He panicked. He was like, shit, I'm not going to be able to, you know, get my fix today. This is his medicine. He's prescribed this. They've suddenly denied him. One day he's expecting to get it. He's gone down there 8 o'clock in the morning. He's then had to, you know, go and take some Valium that he's picked up on the black market for just in case, because this has happened to him before. And he had to drink as well. He had to go and have a couple of beers. And this is early in the morning, and this is not fair if he had just been able to get his prescription. So maybe if he can go home and medicate himself. Not able to do that in his area. There's also a lot of people that are prescribed Tramadol and Valium and Diazepam and Codeine, and they're given out like sweets on the NHS, just like pharmaceutical smack. It's, you know, it's it's there. People don't realise. People are addicted to it. I have been on Tramadol. I know how easy it is to get addicted to it. You've seen Tina Mendes' interview on Cannabis Cure TV, if you've been paying attention. She was on Valium as well to deal with the copious amounts of and other drugs to deal with the pain that she was on. And it become very addicted to it very quickly, or dependent on it. You don't realise that if you forget to take it when you're out, you'll be like, oh, damn, right. The cravings will kick in before the pain. That's, you know, that's the worrying bit. Or the pain will just be there and you'll get cravings for something else. It's quite concerning if it's your own health and you know, you're noticing these things. There are a lot of people that don't notice them, and that's where it's worse. People can get very, very hard, like, strong addictions for pharmaceutical drugs without knowing it. In America, people are addicted to oxycodone, like Smarties. And it shouldn't be down to the patients to fight like this as well. We're the same in the cannabis community. Like, when are we going to have some acceptance and some compassion and common sense? Ask all the patients how they think they can get better, like Erin was done. Not Ian Duncan Smith saying they need to have a bit of tough love. It's, you know, it just doesn't work like that. Addiction isn't a choice, it's an illness. These people need help not to be thrown out to hustle and fiend and lower their life standards. Can't they just be treated like everyone else and with a bit of respect? Would they treat their kids like this if it was them? Oh, I'm sorry, you're addicted. Grow up. It doesn't make sense. You know, get out. That's not going to help them. We hear it time and time again. It's just going to be repeated, like we read in the article. Problems at home, living in care, or losing, becoming homeless. They turn to harder drugs. It happens. I saw a comment on Facebook from a guy named Rob Young. He said, I was a heroin addict for 5 years. I've been clean 11 years this August, and I thank my lucky stars. I managed to overcome it and other issues I have. The majority of addicts will not be in a position to even consider stopping while drugs remain prohibited. Their lives is consumed with scoring, hitting up, and thinking of ways to get cash to get their next fixed. The current laws make something which, in relative terms, is just a bad social habit and make the matters 100,000 times worse. What society has to accept, if they're going to treat people as criminals just for their drug of choice, they can't be up in arms when these people will behave the way they do. Addicts should be given what they need. They shouldn't sign an agreement, or they should sign an agreement at least, not to commit any crime. The ones that are stable enough to work should be able to be given work. They are the ones who aren't should be given the extra help. Give them other options instead of more drugs and more prison, and treat them like an actual human being. And I think the results will be amazing. In fact, I know they would. So that's coming from the user themselves, exactly. Ask the patient what they need. I mean, how is it in the UK, in the cannabis community, haven't we managed to get prescription herbal cannabis for MS, for Crohn's, for cancer, for arthritis, for fibromyalgia, you know, all of these serious conditions, like ME. Why has it taken only since 2010 to get Sativex approved? Only for a marketing authorisation. Why hasn't NICE even approved it yet fully? We need to... I know we've had a lot of, you know, hard media blocks and letdowns, but we need to rise up. We need to get the campaign together, and we need to get people on board, not just on our community, but outside. Within our community, what we are doing is the United Kingdom Cannabis Social Clubs. You know, we're essentially the cannabis consumers network, and we have a right, we have a voice. It's time we used it. I want to say thanks to Isaac, Daryl, for Finch, James, Aaron, Dan, Luke and Noel. Luke drove us down from Reading. We travelled up with Clark. We had a great time. Richard, Smith and Alice, they arranged a great cannabis community meeting at the University of Worcester. I was very impressed. We managed to get Sarah Martin on the Skype. It was a fantastic event. I can't express my joy at how well it went. We had a turnout. We had a very good conversation. And that's what it was great. It was great hearing people in the West Midlands talking about what is affecting them. It was great hearing what they think the law should be. It was great hearing that they have a similar idea to it to us. We know we're not alone. They also were like, if we had known about this, you know, sooner, we would have got more people to come. But luckily, they saw just before, you know, a few days before the meeting. Didn't have enough time to get everyone there, but they were like, when can we have the next one? They emphasised they want another one. So we were really infused by that. Rich, I think, was a bit blown away. He was very happy with how it went. And I think we're going to have a little bit of a listen to Sarah Martin in a minute. When we were on our way up there, though, we're travelling up, like I say, with Clark, Lowell and Luke from Reading. And Clark doesn't really take really that well to travelling. It can take a lot out of him. It can be really energetic. Exhausting, sorry. And unfortunately, when Clark got there, he was so tired. It was only a two-hour drive. That he had to just go and lie down after having a few joints. He still didn't feel well, so he stayed there while we went and chilled with True Cannabis and Frank's Odyssey. But we came back and Clark was still feeling down, and you know, just he was just zoned out. It was, you know, it was the consequences of having MS. We got to the meeting. Clark couldn't speak. He was just too tired. The whole time we were there, he just had to lay down, and it bothers him. It was it's unfortunate that he has to travel all that way and then couldn't do something he was really looking forward to doing, as you heard on last week's podcast. Afterwards, we had a few different strains to smoke with a few different people, and he managed to toke on some of that good old Casey Jones that True Cannabis popped and selected from the head seed selection. That got him up, sitting straight up like a, I don't know, like a rocket. He was great. He was talking, he was chatty, he was energetic, and he was like, oh, damn, I feel really stupid now. I wish I could have talked. And he was, you know, I was like, take a breath, Clark, calm down, man. But it only took a few puffs on that one joint, that specific strain, to change everything for him. And now he knows that. Obviously, he needs to be able to get hold of that medicine when he has those situations, when he feels tired and knackered and he's done a big journey and he's just about to go and speak. Where can he go and get it, though? It's not regulated or anything. It's not like he can go and pop down his dispensary or even legally have his own grow, you know, facility at home, a grow room. Clark has to live, you know, with his parents because he can't get the support he needs because he's not able to get the medicine he needs. So, and anyway, growing's illegal. How can we even get around that issue? Is it really fair for an MS patient to be put through the courts if he's arrested? No, so why would they risk it? Fortunately, there are people out there that are able to do that and are able to put themselves in a better situation. And they even stand up and say, yes, I grow my own medicine, I have to. Some of those people are prescribed Sativex and say, I have to grow my own medicine and use that on top of Sativex because it just doesn't quite do the job on its own. It is cannabis, but it's essentially maybe a stripped-down version of it. So anyway, we're going to head over to the West Midlands Cannabis Community's first local meeting and my interview with Sarah Martin. So without further ado, here we are. We got the aid of great technology with us for the UK CSC meeting here in West Midlands. Big it up, what's the university? Sarah Martin, I'd like to introduce you. Well, I just want to get on to the point of what it's like for a patient in the UK having to use cannabis in an unregulated, prohibited environment. So, like, introduce yourself if you like. It's lovely to have you and here in your virtual world.
In my virtual world. Well, I'm in a regulated world now. Finally, the NHS is my drug dealer. to give me Sativex. I'm on the highest possible dose, which is about 12 bottles a month. And I've never been more medicated before in my life. And without Sativex, I wouldn't be doing this Skype with you, certainly. I have been really ill. I still can't walk without crutches, and it's been 18 months now since the relapse started.
So what?
And it's sad.
Carry on, sorry.
But what were you going to ask?
I was going to say, what was it like? What is a relapse like for you?
Well, I was hit by a virus. So I've never had anything as bad as that. And all of a sudden, I just collapsed on the bathroom floor. My eyes were twitching back and forth. One of my eyes stopped working. Both my arms and my legs stopped working. For the first 3 weeks, I was vomiting up to 5 times a day. And my vision really wasn't good enough to even stand up for about 3 months. I had to crawl around the house up on all fours or shuffle around on my bum like little kids do. You know, making meals on the floor, you know, microwave meals were dragged out the microwave, put on the floor, and then dragged on a towel into the living room. You know, it was a really bad relapse. Now I know how bad MS can get.
Yeah, so can you just describe what MS is for everyone here, like that might not know what it is, and those watching at home?
To your gentle viewers at home, MS is a neurological disorder. You suffer a lot of fatigue, spasms, pain, nausea, all sorts of problems with your bowels and your bladder. Nothing works. Everything you do as an able-bodied person is made harder. From blinking, breathing, swallowing, everything has to be reassessed. And you go about your life in a completely different way. And I've adjusted now. It's been almost 10 years since my diagnosis. I've gone through various stages. But this is, despite the fact that I'm still on crutches, I feel better now than I did 2 years ago. And it's because of Sativex. It's the only reason.
So,
and the fact...
Carry on, sorry.
And the fact that I grow my own. So I bump up the cannabinoid dose, but I grow my own. So I'll take Sativex and whatever I can grow. And I've got an e-cigarette now, which is a great thing. I've decided it's even better than my Volcano. I put my Volcano away since Sativex came into my life. I just, you know, I've gone away from smoking, starting to take care of myself. It's made all the difference. It's the same thing I've heard for the past 10 years. It just goes round, people say the same thing, blah, blah, blah. And it's a bit like the Sativex discussion. Everybody criticising it. It's a bit like somebody saying that their dad is bigger than mine. So I should be pissed off about their dad being bigger than my dad, which is probably right because my dad's only 5'1". But you know what I mean? The law is how it is. And you've got to deal with it. You've got to learn how to get by it. And you've got to learn to be polite and not be frustrated or angry. To get by, to get, you know, chosen by the BBC for documentaries, stuff like that. You don't get that if you get online and you start ranting, or you go to meetings and you start ranting. You have to be polite and say, yeah, I'm aware this really helps a lot of people. It doesn't help me though, because I've used it, a contraband bottle, and I'm giving an assessment based on a couple of squirts that I've put in my mouth. Now, this was developed as a medicine. Sativex was developed as a medicine, not a recreational product at all. Completely different to the recreational argument. This is good stuff. This stuff has saved my life. And I'm sick of people criticising it and downplaying it. The scientists and doctors, physicians, they're crying out for access to Sativex in the United States. And at the same time here, you've got recreational users just getting pissed off because they can't grow it as well. Well, too bad if somebody else's dad is bigger than your dad. It's just the...
These are good birds. Are you there, Sarah? But the content in Sativex is different from, like, from just most smoking just normal joints, isn't it?
Is that right, Sarah?
Yes, I am. The level of CBD in there, is that the main thing, do you think, has made the difference?
Oh, yeah. The spasms have stopped dramatically. I can actually start driving again soon, because I've basically got permanent camera shake.
Yeah.
When I look at the world, it's spinning and shaking constantly, and I've had to learn to compensate for that. And you suffer a lot of nausea until you've worked out how to deal with it. And Sativex is stopping that slowly. The more I put in my system, the closer I am to driving my car again. And it's a sports car parked, you know, just 30 feet away, 40 feet away, and I haven't been able to drive it for 2 years.
You're going to take me out for a spin, isn't it?
Yeah. Why not? It's a smart roadster. Convertible.
Sweet. So, do you find that you have to use other cannabis on top of the Sativex as well? Or is it just, like, have you tried just using Sativex on its own?
Well, Sativex on its own only get you so far. It's got me out of relapse, the worst symptoms of relapse. And I'm just dealing with the dreg ends of the symptoms now. But I make capsules. I've stopped smoking completely because I don't want bronchitis when I'm older. And my predecessor, when I went to Bonn, if people know this, I'm the British representative of the International Association of Cannabinoid Medicines. And I went to Bonn University to do a lecture. And it was fantastic. What was I saying again? Stone the line?
Anyone remember?
You can't remember either.
I was following you so close.
This is why cannabis is still...
You were saying that you have to use...
It's still blue.
You have to use other cannabis on top of Sativex. And then you'll say you go to the meeting at the conference in Bonn.
And you get a grasp from the scientists that they were telling you that you have to take as many cannabinoids as you can, but because of restrictions, Sativex is a piece of shit product, but it's the best we can get in the UK at the moment, so I'm sticking with it and supporting it. And if other countries want it, then it can't be that bad.
Yeah, they've gone global this year, 2012, Sativex, GW Pharmaceuticals have got it in every continent. I reckon by the end of the year, it looks likely that they will get FDA approval. A guy gave a presentation recently in Texas at a university, and he did kind of let things slip. And they are going to be, I spoke to GW Pharmaceuticals very recently at Manchester University. I went up to a cannabinoid pain and inflammation conference. Toxicology expert at the head of toxicology, can't remember his name.
Stephen Wright, was it?
No, it wasn't Stephen Wright, it was another gentleman.
Oh, the other guy.
He said that they are going to be releasing non-THC cannabis medicines and heavy, CBD medicines, but there's going to be a whole different range of non-Sativex based, non-squirting, so oral capsule based
cannabis medicine. Have you seen that new tablet, the 1:1:1
ratio CBD, CBN and THC?
Now, I know that they're producing a higher THC, for example, gives a cancer patient to help them with the pain.
It's got a brand name.
Well, that's right, Sarah.
There is a THC Sativex coming out. It's the one that they're developing for cancer patients.
Uh-huh. But they are finding that, do you reckon, more euphoria? From the data that I've researched, it seems to be that a little bit of euphoria helps. Yeah.
Appetite.
Talking to the scientist, I was trying to get across how much value there is in euphoria and escapism.
See, this is what we were saying.
And I think that part of the cannabis isn't popular with politicians. The Sativex was developed to bypass the law. It was designed so that people like me could medicate despite the law. And it's done its job really well. I am medicating with it openly.
Do you use it as a conversation starter?
No, people have never heard of it.
Are you surprised
by
that?
People in the cabinet. I'm not surprised. People are just getting on with their own lives, with their own troubles, paying their bills. They're not interested in sentiments. We're still a minority group. Remember that.
So tell us the process. What did you have to go through to get sativex? Is it easy? Is it easy? Is like, is it as easy as growing a plant?
Well, no. You have to be really bad. You have to go through a really bad relapse. Then they say, oh, quick, give us sativex. But of course, you should know this. Sativex is a is not a complementary medicine. It is a disease-modifying drug. And that's what we need to get across in the next year or so. Just going out talking to people. I've got in touch with somebody who's going to help me with promotion, online promotion or promotion in person. We've talked about contacting the WI, the Women's Institute.
Excellent.
And going to talk to them. There's all sorts in the pipeline. I actually want to go and see Chef Cheryl Schumann in Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. because that's the sort of person I am. And go for a talk with her.
Yeah, over in the Normal Women's Alliance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Just on that note, we have actually started a Normal in the UK. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. It's a national organisation for reform of marijuana laws in the United Kingdom. A 40-year organisation over in the States brought it over here. It's about time we had something reputable to stand behind and in front of and all sorts of things. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But so the process of getting your prescription, like, what did you have, who did you have to go and see? How many times?
Well, I went and asked for it about five times. This was about 5-6 years ago. And they said, no, you've got to be... There's stuff in the pipeline, stuff being developed. As soon as it came on the market, I asked again here about 2 years ago, and they said, no, you can't have it unless you're really ill. And I was still walking about and travelling all over the place. I wasn't ill by their standards. As soon as I got ill, I got sativex. In fact, my doctor forgot that she could prescribe it to me. I had to go remind her I was ill. See, she's a busy person. You've got to keep on top of the problem yourself, even though you're a sick person.
Do you think that if you hadn't have got so bad and that you'd got the medicine, you'd be where you are now, or?
Oh, no.
You'd be ahead of where you are, or?
I wouldn't be sat up talking to you if I didn't have sativex.
No, I mean, if you had got it earlier rather than having to relapse fully, would you have been able to, would you be further ahead now? So if they'd given you, intervened before the relapse, would that have made a massive difference to your life? Do you think you'd be much further ahead than you are now, or?
Oh, definitely. And the big thing that it gives you is that it takes away stress. I'm not half as terrified as the police coming to the door again, because they could take away half or everything. I've got all my growth, and I still have sativex. It'll still come, and I still have contacts in Birmingham. The supply is dwindling at the moment. I still have contacts who can supply me if I need it, you know?
Yeah, Richard was saying, I'm sure you heard, that the police have set up a task force, or the Birmingham area have got a special task force for cannabis. A group of 10 specially designated officers go around the West Midlands area.
Helicopter stuff. Basically,
663 bucks in the last year. So that's more than two a week. Two a day. That's.
I heard them yesterday. I think they fly very low over Meriden because it's right next to Birmingham. And the A45, the dual carriageway, is the only thing that separates Meriden from Birmingham. So. The police get here. But fortunately, micro room in room.
Stop that video, mate. Just go on, like, do you guys know much about GW? How confident are you on
Hello,
a few little questions? Isaac excused.
I don't actually even know what Sativex is. She's talking about in bottles. What is it?
It basically is just a cannabis mouth, like a cannabis extract. So they take it, you know, the medicinal part of cannabis is in the resin, like the trichomes, the glands on it.
Yeah.
They extract all that using a solvent like ethanol or like a CO2 extraction.
Basically, so they just, hash oil.
They just remove it all. It is hash concentrated down. Suspended tincture. It's got a little bit of like polypropylene glycol, which is almost like a synthetic honey.
They seem to go through a lot of effort to give something that isn't weed, where they could just sort of give.
And then they
put
it in weed. Yeah. It is 100%
raw equivalent material to smoking, because
they
How much is it for a normal patient, like, or a normal MS patient to get prescribed Sativex?
It's an £8 prescription, gives you 3 bottles of Sativex. So 3 times an ounce and a half of cannabis tincture.
That's not the standard prescription price, though, is it? £8.
It is on the NHS.
I thought a lot of patients were paying £125 to to £325 for like 3 bottles.
Well, I'm not. You know, I know privately you pay upwards of £400 to get it through the NHS. It's £8. And I don't know what the arrangement is for people who have to pay £120.
Is that a case of, do you think that Dan's saying the PCTs, primary care trusts, aren't funding it, and they're saying, well, if you want it, you can pay for it, because they still get...
Well, they're partially funding it. It sounds like they're only paying for half the medication. But the thing is that there's more expensive medicines out there. And I don't know why they're quibbling about the price of Sativex.
What, medicines that they prescribe already are more expensive?
Yeah. I mean, the price of Sativex is £400 a week. That's nothing compared to some people's medications if they've got terrible Parkinson's disease or other neurological disorders, and they're on the medication constantly. It will come to much more money than that.
So, like, what happened before you got your Sativex? You went out to Amsterdam to see if you could try and get prescribed medicine by a doctor out there in Holland.
No, I didn't, but I watched somebody else do it. And they went to a Dutch chemist and they scored their Bedrocan medicine, but they couldn't bring it back to the UK. That was the only problem. But anybody can go out there and get Bedrocan medicine. But hey, you can go into a coffee shop and get it for about the same price. And you can get what strain suits you best if you go to a coffee shop.
So do you think it's just an alternative for people that don't want to use the coffee shop system but need to use it medically then?
Yeah. There's plenty of people who need Sativex who aren't stoners, you know. They've never used cannabis before in their life. They're probably terrified of it. You know, because they're listening to all the media all the time. So they've turned it into a medicine to get by that stigma.
Do you come across that quite a lot as a patient? Do people understand if they find out that you use cannabis or anything, that they have a stigma about you, or do they just accept it straight away?
In the village where I live, everybody accepts it straight away. a very transient community. There's a few hotels there. There's always Pakistanis or Albanians walking about with joints in their hands. It's rather incredible. And I can go into the local tea rooms and I can suck on my e-cig and spray my Sativex in my hot chocolate. And we talk about cannabis all the time. I do a little exchange under the table with the guy who runs the coffee shop, and he finds some decent resin sometimes, and he passes me some stuff back. You know, true stoner friendships are born out of this prohibition.
So what advice can you give these fine people here today that have turned up to the first ever West Midlands Cannabis Community meeting? For a patient in your situation, what advice can you give these guys to take home that would help someone like you out?
Be polite. Say, you know, I understand your feelings about cannabis, but they have to come up with this medicine for people who really need it. It's not just a bad drug. You can't actually produce medicine from it. And point out the fact that there's loads of opiate medications, you know, already, and that's made from heroin. You know, nobody around here takes the Daily Mail seriously, even though they read it. It's just like a comedy mag for them.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Do you want to, you know, stay on the line for the rest of the session?
Yeah. But the last thing is, I will stress this. Be polite to people and say, yes, I do understand. And yes, we do want the same thing. We want our streets to be safe, kids to be safe. But as the evidence is clear, the current situation is terrible. Prohibition isn't working. We need to rethink. Just advertise to everybody who comes and attacks you trying to change the law. Just say, I want what you want. We just have a different opinion about how to achieve it. That's all. I just want a discussion. I'm not angry. Don't be angry about it. And if you're the nice, calm person, then you'll win every time. If you're the calm, patient, smiley person, then it's the ranting that I don't like. If people show they're angry, then they've lost the war already.
Cool. Well, thank you very much again, Sarah.
Wonderful that you have started these groups. I've been doing this for 10 years, and then just in the past few months, it's all come to life. And it's great, great to see.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Cheers. And I'm dying for a pee, I'm going to have to go.
All right, thank you very much. We'll catch up later.
No problem. Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
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 I love it. I just want to talk about, like, literally, it leads on very well, thanks for saying that, Sarah, the UK CFC movement and the normal movement we've got. There is quite a lot of activism kicking off in the UK. It has never been so, like, exciting to be part of activism. It's not sort of some geeky, nerdy, hippie, hobo, you know, that, all that sort of thing that they, you
old
know...
Old man with old ideas.
It's not that sort of, like, portrayal that people have of it. It is, we, you know, with what we're doing now, I think this is pretty cool. We get together, we talk about stuff, obviously. We talk about more of our refined interests after the meeting, obviously. Had a talk about, you know, the deeper appreciation of weed. But this is where it starts. We can go and talk about this, you know, what we found out here with other people, and just start spreading it. We've got about 30 of these groups set up in the UK. This is about the fourth club to have a local meeting. And what we're fighting for is to have access to cannabis clubs like they've got in Spain, similar maybe possibly to having what they've got in Amsterdam or in Holland in general. We want to be able to go into a coffee shop or a cannabis club where we have access to a whole range of strains. Like you saw on that video there was probably about 100 different strains grown in that warehouse, 100,000 watts there. I want to be able to know that there's a warehouse down the road growing all that weed. growing that nice cannabis, and it's going to be cured properly. It's going to be presented nice. I'm going to be able to go out and buy it, and you know, in a nice glass jar or whatever like that. It's not going to be all brushed and sat on and passed through hundreds of hands. It's not going to have pubes in it. It's not going to have dog hairs. It's not going to have glass or iron filings. Or it's not going to be sprayed with sugar or any other of this crap. You know, I get people contacting me weekly saying sprayed weed here, sprayed weed there. This is what it looks like. That's on your pictures, and it's just like. It does make me rich. Like, what the hell are people think they're doing?
Charge fucking money for it, like, you know what I mean? £10, that's fucking £10, mate.
It's dire in the situation. It's £10 to get it.
Disgusting.
And they've got
no worse over the past 7 years.
No,
it's only dickheads, though, mate. Yeah. Like, any decent person would never, ever, ever dream of doing that, mate, you know what I mean?
They're the people we don't, you know.
That's right, but by putting it in the hands of the fucking government, you won't get. Dickheads like making money off of fucking
stuff. The problem is people keep buying it off them. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, if they keep buying it, they're
going to
keep.
There's all these new stoners being fucking born. Like, you know,
that's what I mean.
So
yeah, this is why we need to be here now. Be responsible about it. Right. So these younger stoners, and if people are smoking younger because they can't, you know, there's no ID at the moment. If they're 16 or even 14, they need to know what sprayed weed looks like. They need to know the dangers of those things.
Education,
and they need to learn to say say no to sprayed weed. That's honestly.
Yeah, they're trying to say no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Really, they should be educating
they
you
should
and telling
be.
You
they
what.
They should be honest. And what better like, to do something.
Cannabis cures. All right, guys, that was a bite size of the West Midlands' first cannabis community meeting. I'm really stoked how it went. Everyone was really excited to get a next one. Richard is excited to get the next one going. He's also going to be preparing the Welsh Cannabis Club for their first ever meeting. And it was great turnout at the what do we call it? You know, the Welsh Global Cannabis March in Cardiff. That we thought it was a good idea to get that ball rolling. The Welsh Cannabis Club got really active on Facebook, so if you are on Facebook and you want to be part of any of these clubs, just find the United Kingdom Cannabis Social Clubs on there, and you'll be able to find a link to your nearest one, or you can go on cannabiscure.co.uk and click on the UK CSC tab. The Welsh Club, they're getting an activist box together, so people can buy one, they get leaflets, a pen, a lighter, maybe a lanyard, badges, whatever, maybe a shirt, I'm not too sure, but they get that and they go out and they can arm themselves and be, you know, feet on the street, they can be activists. They are also getting their merchandise together. They want to get Welsh Cannabis Club hoodies with a big cannabis leaf and a red dragon on the back. Welsh Cannabis Club down the arm, WCC on the chest, I think it's great. So if you want one of those, you check it out at bigcartel.com. That's ukglass.bigcartel.com. You can pre-order one. They're £28, or you can get one £37 with the Welsh Cannabis Club logos on the UK stash jars. That's a good way to support the UK CSEs, and especially the Welsh Cannabis Club, getting their act together. They've got an army out there, I'd say. And it'd be good if we could support them, and or they can support themselves, get on there, support Rich, get the meetings going, and keep your herbs cured. Anyone else is interested in a stash jar, I've got them available, like I say, on ukglass.bigcartel.com. There's a link on my website, the banner in the middle there on the page. You can click on that and go over there, buy a Cure shirt or a Cure hoodie or a Cure jar, and support me in what I do. Get around travelling the country, going to these UK CSC meetings, putting on these podcasts, going to interview people and patients, and getting the story out there. You've got all the news on cannabiscure.co.uk. We've got more news coming from normal.org, and we've got even more news coming from the UK CSCs very soon. We want to get one in London, we want to get one in Sussex, and we want to get one in your town, in your county, and we want to come and visit you and tell the truth. And we want to hear what you have got to say more than anything else. All right, then, I just want to mention, before we go, the membership price packages for Normal. We're just starting to roll out this information now. It will be available on normal-uk.org, and you can follow us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/normaluk, as you would expect. We are sharing news stories and other stories from around the community, and we just want you to register your interest, so when we do start putting out a lot more information, you will be able to get that firsthand. You'll be able to share it with people and get the news out. Memberships are going to be four different types. We've got Basic, which is going to be a £15, Sustainer, which will be a £30, Friend, which will be a £75, and Benefactor, which is £200. We also are going to put a concession and an OAP, so sort of student or pensioner, at £10, which will be the same as the basic. Each of those packages is going to have different merchandise deal to go alongside it. So you're gonna, there's going to be badges and jars and shirts and pens and a membership card with every member, so it'll be something worthwhile joining up to. You're not just getting paying your money and watching someone do something on the internet and writing some blogs. This is a group of people that are going to be going out and lobbying MPs at Parliament. We are going to be going out and meeting MPs in their offices, at their clinics. We're going to be going out and helping patients. We're going to be bringing out the stories of the people that are in need of it the most. So please go and check that out on facebook.com/normaluk. Alright guys, we're going to wrap this one up now. Thank you very much for joining us in the Cannabis Cure Freedom News Podcast here at cannabiscure.co.uk. Thanks very much, Johnny Lyon. Awesome to see you again. Yeah, we'll see you again soon. And you at home, thanks for tuning in. It's absolutely awesome having you here. And we look forward to growing together. Peace out.